The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Brandy Spragata for the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next hour, I will be reading to you from Oprah Magazine.
Who leads Pontoon Talent Services and the ADECO Group in its Americas regions, expanded her executive role and was appointed to CEO in 2020. Rapoche started with ADECO Group in her native France in 1993, and throughout her career specialized in leading major business transformations while moving through senior sales, operations, and product positions in Europe and America. As an advocate of women leadership, she believes in Dress for Success's path to uplifting women. Janessa Cox Irvin. At the research firm Alliance Bernstein, based in Nashville, Tennessee, Janessa Cox Irvin has led the development of a formalized diversity and inclusion philosophy, including a framework for community and employee engagement and corporate partnership, and her role as global head of D&I. Prior to joining AB in 2015, Cox Irvin spent 11 years at Deutsche Bank, where she served as D&I manager and was responsible for integrating diversity practices within the corporate banking and securities and global transaction banking divisions globally. In her experience, she recognizes the value of each person's story. "I think there's so much power in authenticity. Our truth is our power. Our story is our power. Our purpose is our power." Kate Burke. Leading another side of the research firm, Alliance Bernstein, is Chief Operating Officer Kate Burke, who is responsible for overseeing legal, compliance, corporate communications, human capital, corporate and information security, operations, and technology. Say that three times straight. She began at AB first at Bernstein Research in 2004 in institutional sales, and since has advanced in various leadership roles such as Senior VP and Managing Director, Head of Human Capital and Chief Talent Officer, and Chief Administrative Officer. Burke's work in financial services and consulting industry spans more than two decades. "Together, we are responsible for finding ways to lift each other up and pave the path forward for the next generation of female leaders," Burke says. Jamie Jones Miller. As a graduate of James Madison University, Jamie Jones Miller has held leadership roles with Alpha Sigma Tau National Sorority for more than two decades. The sorority is a lifelong membership association with more than 65,000 members and 83 chapters on college campuses. And now, as the 15th national president of Alpha Sigma Tau, Miller oversees the sorority's mission to invest in women by instilling the skills necessary to navigate life. Alpha Sigma Tau National Sorority stands with Dress for Success. "Together, we will do everything in our power to combat the she session," she says. Jamie currently serves on the Leadership Council for Women in National Security and is passionate about opening doors for women. Linda Finley Kozlowski. Linda Findley Kozlowski is Blue Apron's president, CEO, and a member of its board of directors. Blue Apron, an ingredient and recipe meal kit subscription service, is working to build a better food system by partnering with farmers for high-quality ingredients and then distributing ingredients at a better value. She's partnering with Dress for Success because she believes when you help a woman find economic independence, you are helping her family, her community, and her entire ecosystem around her. Prior to joining Blue Apron, Kozlowski was the COO of Etsy, Inc. She also serves on the board of directors and is a member of the Finance and Audit Committee of the Ralph Lauren Corporation, in addition to serving on the board of directors of StyleSeed, Inc., an online platform for beauty and wellness professionals, as well as Dress for Success. Cheryl Abel Hodges. As CEO of renowned fashion brand Calvin Klein, Inc., Cheryl Abel Hodges is responsible for strategy, product development, marketing, and commercial operations for all Calvin Klein product lines across the world. "By supporting Dress for Success, we at Calvin Klein can generate impact for women today and for future generations," Abel Hodges says about the Your Hour, Her Power campaign. Prior to her boss role as CEO, Abel Hodges oversaw Calvin Klein's parent company, PVH's innovative underwear platform, where she managed underwear businesses for its brands. In 2019, Cheryl received the prestigious National Human Relations Award from the American Jewish Committee. Emily Rubenfield. Emily Rubenfield is the global president of Caroline Herrera, the New York-based fashion brand internationally recognized for women's luxury, ready-to-wear, and bridal collections. Emily is leading the organization to be at the forefront of women's luxury fashion while building a thriving global brand for the future. Prior to her current role, Emily held the position of chief marketing officer at the company. Emily is a member of FIT, the Fashion Institute of Technology, Social Justice Advisory, as well as the Fashion and Luxury Council of NYU Stern School of Business, and a committed mentor to New York-based independent designers. I echo the Dress for Success belief that a career can be a woman's most vital and powerful conduit to independence and fulfillment, Rubenfield says. Jill Evanko. Jill Evanko works as the CEO and president of Chart Industries, an engineer equipment manufacturer that focuses on clean energy. Evanko served in this leading role since 2017, but she started at the company in 2014 as chief financial officer. She explains why she is joining forces with Dress for Success. Chart Industries and I have engaged in the Your Hour, Her Power campaign because we understand the importance and impact of gender diversity in the world. As a testament to her work, she has received honors such as the 2020 ExxonMobil PowerPlay Rainmaker Award, the 2020 S&P Global Platts Energy Award for Chief Trailblazer, and the World LNG Executive of the Year for 2020. Nikki Leondakis. At Core Power Yoga, its mission is to show the life-changing things that can happen with the workout and mindfulness of yoga, says Nikki Leondakis, who leads that mission as CEO of the subscription studio franchise. Leondakis has consistently built and led some of the most diverse and customer-centric teams in the hospitality industry. She has more than 30 years of experience building lifestyle brands and creating award-winning workplace cultures that drive innovation and customer loyalty. Since 2002, she has been named one of the 100 most influential women by the San Francisco Business Times annually. She acknowledges the sheroes that came before her when expressing her support for Dress for Success. I would not be the leader I am today if not for the guidance and compassion of so many brilliant women before me. Sue Y. Nabe. No stranger to the beauty industry, Sue Y. Nabe has worked in her role as CEO of the beauty hub Coty Inc. since September 2020, but has more than 30 years of experience within the company. This includes a track record of success across the mass and luxury channels, as well as successful brand building across international markets. She says, "I see women in the heart of our communities who are helping make the world a better place each day." Nabe has an advanced master's degree in marketing management from Paris Business School and an engineering degree in agronomy and environment. She began her career at L'Oreal in 1993. During this period, she was named Manager of the Year in 2008 by Cosmétique magazine and won the Prix d'Excellence Marie Claire Award 3 years in a row. Penny Pennington. As a sixth managing partner in financial firm Edward Jones' 98-year history, Penny Pennington is responsible for the firm's strategic direction, working together with more than 49,000 associates across North America to make a meaningful difference in the lives of more than 7 million clients by helping them financially achieve their most important goals. Pennington began her career with the Fortune 500 firm in 2000 as a financial advisor and has since held various leadership roles, including being a senior executive sponsor of the firm's LGBT Plus and Allies Business Resource Group. She discussed the importance of investing in uplifting women in the workforce. "When we help women build the skills to achieve financial independence, our families, our communities, and our society are all better for it." Ramona Hood. Ramona Hood is president and CEO of FedEx Custom Critical, where she oversees the executive leadership team and is responsible for the performance and strategic direction of the company. Hood began her career at the company in an entry-level position in 1991 and has worked her way up to hold various executive leadership positions, shifting in many areas including operations, safety, sourcing, sales, and marketing. As an African-American woman and mother of two daughters, I understand the importance of community empowerment and working together to uplift those in our communities, Hood says about why she continues to lend support to others. Her work has been recognized with a handful of awards. Most recently, she was recognized on the Crain's Cleveland 2020 Power 150 list. Andy Owen. Herman Miller, the modern office furniture company, is led by its CEO, Andy Owen. In her role, which she's held since August 2018, she oversees the company's aggressive growth strategy to reach untapped market potential around the world. Owen has a history of leading complex customer-focused businesses. She is a lifelong learner whose natural curiosity led her to pursue a variety of professional opportunities in her past 25-year career with Gap Inc. From 2014 to 2017, Andy was also the global president of Banana Republic. She also completed Harvard's first-of-its-kind course during her studies in their business school's advanced management program, Women on Boards, Succeeding as a Corporate Director. We are excited to support Dress for Success and the work they do to design solutions that break the cycle of poverty and empower women to achieve economic independence, she says. Hillary Scott. As the co-leader of music group Lady A, Hillary Scott has been part of becoming one of 21st century's premier vocal groups, blending deeply felt emotions with classic country sounds. While ushering more than 18 million album units, 34 million tracks sold, and nearly 5 billion digital streams, the trio is best known for their 9x platinum hit Need You Now, which is the highest certified song by a country group. When you pull back the curtains of the 9x Grammy winner's decade-plus-long career, Scott has also proven herself to be a savvy leader in the music business world as the co-owner of two corporations overseeing all global and domestic touring operations, music distribution, brand partnerships, and merchandising. As a businesswoman and working mom, I think it is so important for us to rally together to support the Your Hour, Her Power campaign, she says. Jasmine Allen. Jasmine Allen is the first Black woman to serve as senior vice president at luxury brand Moët Hennessy, where she leverages her strategic marketing and brand leadership skills, as well as her extensive industry network, to drive growth for the company. Before joining LVMH, Jasmine was at the Coca-Cola Company in brand management roles for the Coca-Cola, Coke Zero, and Dasani brands. After that, Jasmine moved to T-Mobile to lead their entertainment marketing efforts. While there, she led the naming rights sponsorship of T-Mobile Arena in Las Vegas, created the company's first-ever entertainment marketing strategy, and led celebrity partnership programs that drove incremental subscriber growth for the brand. Your Hour, Her Power is a fantastic opportunity for me and others to continue to support Dress for Success's mission to add value to women's lives, she says in her support. In her role, she is heavily involved in mentorship and has been a strong advocate of improving diversity at Moët Hennessy. Dale Bornstein. M. Booth CEO Dale Bornstein is a passionate and accomplished integrated marketing specialist with over 30 years of experience building brands. She is known as a big idea person with an instinct for connecting talent and ideas, leading to agency innovation and winning connections between brands and consumers. At the communications company, she's led the firm's drive to integration and expansion, deepening and building new capabilities and recruiting best-in-class talent. While partnering with Dress for Success, Bornstein says, "As a female leader, I do my best to lead by example and to inspire everyone in my organization, particularly young women." Dale is a tireless culture bearer, fostering a creative, entrepreneurial, fun, and rewarding work environment. Kathy Warden. Kathy Warden is chairman, chief executive officer, and president of the aerospace defense tech company Northrop Grumman Corporation. Since joining the company in 2008, she has also served as president and chief operating officer, responsible for the operational management of the company's four sectors, as well as its enterprise services organization. She also led the integration of Northrop Grumman's Orbital ATK acquisition. Her message to all of those striving to uplift women in their careers? Please join me in recognizing and appreciating the accomplishments of all the women who are making history in their own way every day. Margaret Keane. Margaret Keane is CEO and a member of the board of directors of Synchrony, a premier consumer financial services company. The company's financial expertise spans key product areas, including apparel, electronics and appliances, home furnishings, automotive, power products and sports, jewelry and luxury, other retail, elective healthcare procedures and services, and more. Prior to joining Synchrony, Keane had an 18-year career with GE Capital, where she held leadership roles spanning consumer finance, vendor financial services, operations, and quality. In 2020, Fortune and American Banker featured Keane as one of the most powerful women in finance. She shares the responsibility that she has in her role. We as leaders must work to ensure that we are advancing women in their careers. Lizanne Kindler. Lizanne Kindler is Chief Executive Officer of Talbots, an omnichannel retailer of women's apparel, shoes, and accessories. Under Kindler's leadership, the Talbots brand has returned to healthy levels of sales and profitability, opened new stores, developed new concepts, and entered new product categories. Before her career at Talbots, where she started as the Senior Vice President of Merchandising in 2008, she spent 15 years in various leadership roles at Ann Taylor Stores Corporations. Kindler has been instrumental in cementing Talbot's status as a brand with purpose by leading the brand's partnership with Dress for Success, which has raised nearly $7 million since its inception in 2014. Mary Dillon. The possibilities are beautiful with Mary Dillon as CEO of Ulta Beauty. The Chicago native has 35 years of experience leading consumer-driven brands in a diverse range of industries, with the common thread being her passion for leveraging customer insights and leading through the lens of culture to build brand engagement and drive results. Dillon began leading the beauty franchise in 2013 and since then has vaulted Ulta to the Fortune 500. She believes strongly in creating a common purpose, removing barriers to inclusion, and driving associate engagement through valuing the perspectives of her diverse team. Dillon also established the Ulta Beauty Charitable Foundation in 2016, which has donated $20+ million to nonprofits supporting women and families. When asked about rallying behind Dress for Success, she says, "I'm thrilled to help Dress for Success empower women to create their own path toward a future of beautiful possibilities." Helen Aboah. Helen Aboah is currently the Chief Executive Officer of Urban Zen, a design vision and philosophy company founded by fashion icon Donna Karan. Urban Zen defines the space where creativity, culture, and collaboration converge with retail, technology, wellness, and social impact. The success of women will require a conscious effort from everyone, especially during these extraordinary times, Aboah says, on behalf of Urban Zen and their support of Dress for Success. Aboah's cross-industry career spans fashion, hospitality, health and wellness, and entertainment, with a deep foundation in the global luxury goods market across wholesale and retail. She has worked side-by-side with iconic fashion designers to commercialize their creative vision through a sound, strategic, capital-efficient operation and winning culture. Christy Pambianchi. As Vice President and Chief Human Resources Officer at Verizon, Christy Pambianchi is responsible for helping thousands of Verizon teamers maximize their potential and realize their greatest ambitions. In 2017, she was inducted as a fellow to the National Academy of Human Resources, recognizing her career contributions to the field of HR. I think one of the first keys to unlocking success is finding what you're passionate about and working with people that share that passion, she says. And she exemplifies that advice in her own work. In response to the staggering rise in unemployment triggered by the COVID crisis, Pambianchi and other HR leaders from various companies joined together to launch People Plus Work Connect, a coalition to connect companies with workforces laid off or furloughed with those in urgent need of workers. Rima Qureshi. Rima Qureshi serves as Executive Vice President and Chief Strategy Officer at Verizon, where she is responsible for the development and implementation of Verizon's overall corporate strategy, business development, partnerships, strategic investments, and acquisitions. Her more than two decades of leadership experience in the mobile communications industry include more than 15 years of global experience. She has experience in all stages of business, including sales, product management, operations, and research and development. In her experience, she shares insight on the process of running into obstacles. The way that you learn is by making mistakes. It is okay to fail because failure is how we learn and how we grow, she says. Tammy Irwin. In the Verizon leadership team, Tammy Irwin's role is Executive Vice President and CEO of Verizon Business, a global leader serving 97% of Fortune 500 companies. She is widely recognized for her strategic impact, marketing and operations focus, technical savvy, and passion for people. Prior to her current role, Irwin was still part of the Verizon company as the head of operations for Verizon Wireless, and she led Verizon Fios, the nation's largest residential and commercial fiber network. Tammy has a long history of championing engagement and development programs that help women and people with intellectual and developmental disabilities grow their skills. She's the proud advisor of Verizon's Veterans Employee Resource Group and carries a passion for the impact of STEAM education on changing the trajectory of people's lives. To the women striving to make a difference, she says, "My biggest piece of advice for every woman who wants to be a leader is believe in yourself." Gail Grimmett. Honored as one of the 50 most powerful women in New York in 2013, 2015, and 2017 by Crain's New York Business, Gail Grimmett is an industry-recognized expert in aviation and hospitality. As the first chief experience officer at private jet charter company Wheels Up, she oversees every aspect of its member experience, including member experience and brand activation, member programming, communications, public relations, social, and member benefits. She comes from working at Delta Airlines, where she spent 20 years serving in multiple roles over the years, with her longest tenure as Delta's senior vice president. When asked about her support for Dress for Success, she says, "When we stand together, we become stronger together. That is why I'm participating in the Your Hour, Her Power campaign." Stephanie Chung. In 2020, Stephanie Chung joined Wheels Up as the company's first chief growth officer, focusing on generating revenue through new client acquisition by building preference and loyalty among diverse customer segments, including BIPOC, LGBTQ+, and women. But even before her new role as Wheels Up, she was already making history. With over 30 years of experience catalyzing transformative growth in the aviation sector, Chung was widely recognized as a trailblazer as the first African-American president of a major private aviation company when she took the helm as president of JetSuite. Chung recognizes the encouragement that she received from other women, she says. "Behind every successful woman is a tribe of other successful women who have her back." Jenny Zhu. What started as a fascination with Pokemon in grade school has led to a career path for Jenny Zhu, founder and CEO of Talofa Games. Recognized on Forbes 30 Under 30 list, Zhu is passionate about the intersection of fitness and gaming and is currently developing a social running game that won the Niantic Beyond Reality contest in 2019. She solo develops horror comedy mobile games for her indie game company JC Soft Inc., which began when she was 12. In her free time, she runs Abs with Jenny, a gamified virtual fitness class that has taught over 430 people and raised over $10,000 for charity. Zhu says Talofa Games is excited to be supporting the campaign for Dress for Success because we believe that everyone needs a community to go to, especially when times get tough. Renee Gittens. Renee Gittens' job is Executive Director of the International Game Developers Association, a nonprofit organization focused on supporting game developers. She is a passionate advocate and connector for developers and diversity in the game industry, with a background that spans engineering, design, and production. She is outspoken about initiatives to increase diversity both within the game industry and gaming overall to help the game industry grow and improve for everyone. The power of women is the power of the world, she says. I am proud to be supporting Dress for Success and this campaign to uplift women everywhere. This is a time of need for women around the world, and we must take action to empower them professionally. Christina Seal. Despite the challenges of starting a business in a predominantly male industry, Christina Seal is an example of what dedication and an entrepreneurial mindset can achieve. As CEO and founder of Maximum Games, she has elevated the humble startup since it established in 2009, and now it is currently one of the top 20 full-service video game publishers in business today and still among the fastest growing. Seal currently divides her time in managing her global team at Maximum Games, its indie subsidiary Modus Games, and attending the Owner President Management Program at Harvard Business School in Boston. She says, one positive act can affect a woman's entire trajectory, her motivation, her determination, and even her worldview. Leah Hoyer. For the past decade, Leah Hoyer has focused on interactive storytelling across various media. As Vice President of Creative for Wizards of the Coast's New Kids Gaming Studio, she is passionate about supporting diverse voices in entertainment and working to make everyone feel that gaming is for them. Her work experience includes developing and producing produced television series, video games, and interactive experiences for some of the world's most successful companies, such as Disney and Xbox. Hoyer supports Dress for Success and wants everyone else to do the same. Dress for Success empowers women around the globe to build a better, more secure life for themselves and their families. Please join me in supporting this wonderful cause, she says. Mindy Grossman. Mindy Grossman joined WW as president and CEO in July 2017, where she led the introduction of the Impact Manifesto, a strategic vision for the company that unveiled a new purpose: to inspire healthy habits for real life. In addition to rebranding from Weight Watchers to WW, Mindy introduced two different food innovations, built a wellness ecosystem, and made significant changes to empower members to take control of their health. One of her biggest goals at WW is to make wellness accessible to everyone. Mindy is widely recognized as an accomplished innovator and champion for workplace diversity and equality, having been named three times by Forbes magazine as one of the world's 100 most powerful women, among other awards and recognitions. She says, "Your hour, her power is more than a mission. It's a responsibility for us to celebrate our female leaders and propel their future." Our next article by Svetlana Kiddo is titled, "A Primer on the Gun Control Legislation Currently in Congress." In recent years, the United States has seen a significant rise in mass shootings. As of June 2022, there have already been more than 250 mass shootings nationwide, averaging to about four a week. Seven of the 10 deadliest mass shootings in U.S. history have taken place in the past 10 years. The Uvalde, Texas shooting, where 19 children and two adults were shot and killed in an elementary school classroom, is number nine on that list. The Buffalo supermarket shooting, where 10 black people were murdered by an 18-year-old white supremacist, is number 27. In the wake of these two shootings, we've heard the volume on this country's reckoning with gun violence reach a fever pitch. Lawmakers in the House and Senate began drafting gun control measures in the immediate aftermath of the shootings, while Representative Chris Jacobs of New York stunned fellow Republicans by announcing he would support a federal assault weapons ban and limits on high-capacity magazines. In early June, President Biden addressed the nation with an appeal to Congress to reinstate the assault weapons ban, as well as other gun control measures. In the following days, families and survivors of Uvalde and Buffalo gave emotional pleas and testimonies at a series of House hearings on gun violence. At one such hearing, on June 8th, 11-year-old Mia Cirillo described to the House Oversight and Reform Committee how she stayed alive in the 78 minutes before law enforcement intervened by smearing herself in her slain friend's blood. These voices are not singular. In fact, research finds that a solid majority of Americans support some version of gun control laws. With public figures like Matthew McConaughey joining the call with emotional testimony before Congress, these numbers are likely to go up. In late May, a Politico Morning Consult poll found that 59% of registered voters think it's important for lawmakers to pass stricter gun laws. A Reuters Ipsos poll found that 70% of Americans support red flag laws, which require police to remove guns from people in crisis. Additionally, 72% of people polled said they would support raising the purchasing age of firearms from 18 to 21. These two measures are part of a bill called the Protecting Our Kids Act, which passed the Democrat-majority House on June 8th and is now with the Senate. Some of the bills in the package include the Raise the Age Act, led by Representative Anthony Brown, Democrat from Maryland, Representative Ted Deutch, Democrat from Florida's Keep Americans Safe Act, which would prohibit the import, sale, manufacture, transfer, or possession of a large-capacity magazine, and Ethan's Law, led by Representative Rose DeLauro, Democrat from Connecticut, which would create new provisions and requirements for the safe storage of guns in the home and provide tax credits for secure storage devices. Other laws would require expanding background checks to cover private gun sales and banning assault weapons. Every Town for Gun Safety and its grassroots networks, Moms Demand Action and Students Demand Action, lent their support to the bill on June 2nd. A clear majority of Americans want Congress to pass laws to keep their families safe, and it's time for the Senate to meet those demands with action. Recently, there has been significant progress in the fight for gun control laws. Continuing to rise to the call, the Senate recently unveiled a bipartisan bill called the Bipartisan Safe Communities Act, which would home in on red flag tactics, expanding background checks, instituting more thorough review of 18 to 21-year-olds who want to buy guns, and it also includes $750 million to help states implement and run crisis intervention programs. Recently, the Senate and House both passed the bill. Now it will go to President Biden to be signed into law. While this bipartisan bill is the largest piece of gun legislation in decades, many think it doesn't go far enough. The bill fails to impose universal background checks or ban large capacity magazines, especially in light of recent news that the Supreme Court struck down a New York law that places restrictions on carrying a gun outside the home. Newly politicized in the wake of the mass shootings, many Americans are wondering what the latest gun control legislation looks like and how they can make their voices heard in support of them. If you are in favor of these laws and want to make your voice heard, contacting your representatives is just an email or phone call away. You can draft a letter that directly addresses your particular views on the Protect Your Kids Act, such as the one that U.S. Men's National Soccer Team recently published, or you can send a form letter through organizations like Every Town for Gun Safety. If you want to volunteer, donate, or otherwise get involved with gun control organizations in your town, checking out the websites of Every Town, Sandy Hook Promise, Brady United, or Giffords is a good place to start. Our next article is titled, When Suicide Intervention Becomes Your Job, a Golden Gate Bridge officer shares his story. A typical tourist will return your gaze, engage in conversation. People who might want to hurt themselves, on the other hand, tend to be alone, often acting evasive. Or they're crying and pacing. Sometimes we'll follow a person, and if they don't meet up with others, we'll approach them. I'll establish a rapport by making conversation. It's common for people who have come to jump to say they just want to enjoy the view. Yet it will be foggy, and they've been out there for 30 minutes in short sleeves. Then I may ask direct questions. What are you really doing out there? You look sad. Can you tell me what's going on in your life? I'll delve deeper. You came here to hurt yourself, didn't you? Sometimes just how are you doing is enough. People are surprisingly truthful. A few months ago, as I was patrolling on a bike, I noticed a guy in his 20s who was avoiding eye contact. When I smiled, he half-smiled back, and it seemed forced. I said, "I'm sorry to bother you, but I get the sense that something's wrong. What's going on?" Right away, he responded, "Everyone hates me." When I asked why, he said, "Because I'm a bad person." We talked about how he'd been depressed for some time and how he'd tried to hurt himself. We kept talking, then I led him off the bridge. He went to the hospital for further evaluation. But our efforts don't always work. There was a young woman who'd climbed over the railing, and my partner and I thought we made a real connection with her. Yet she turned and jumped anyway. Later we heard she survived, but with very significant injuries. This job can be extremely rewarding, but if one of us didn't pass a person at a particular moment, if we didn't notice that little tweak in their behavior, if we didn't engage them, their life would be over. Then there are the people that you missed. You saw them, may have talked to them, shook their hand and wished them a good day, and then they jumped. That's profound. It's terrible. But I don't have time to wallow. Another person is coming, and I have to get back on the bike and find them. Our next article by Ariana Davis is titled, "How Instagram Exec Eva Chen Decided to Leave Her Magazine Dream Job." Long before Eva Chen became the director of fashion partnerships at Instagram and earned herself 1 million followers on the app, she was just like many of us, trying to figure out what she wanted to do with the rest of her life. As a pre-med student at Johns Hopkins in Baltimore, Chen felt she was a square peg in a round hole, someone who loved wellness and health and the idea of helping people, but still didn't quite feel like medicine was the right fit. A summer internship in the fashion closet at Harper's Bazaar in New York changed everything. It was then that Chen decided she wanted a career in fashion, which she began to pursue in 2001 after graduating from Hopkins. Unfortunately, that was the same year as the end of the dot-com boom and September 11th. Finding a job in New York was tough, period, but especially in magazines, according to Chen. That was my first setback because I'd had this major aha moment, as Oprah would call it, where I'd finally discovered what I felt like I was meant to do, and then I couldn't find any opportunities to actually do it, Chen says. I felt like, okay, is this the universe telling me magazines are actually not for me? I applied and sent my resume and applied some more, but there were just no jobs, none. So Chen took a position at a law firm, and after a few months, she reluctantly decided it was time to start applying to law schools. And then she got an email from a former Bazaar colleague about a brand new shopping magazine called Lucky that was looking for an assistant to work on fashion credits. The law firm quickly became a distant memory, saving Chen from what would have been, as she puts it, a disastrous legal career with several malpractice suits. The now 38-year-old went on to work at Elle and Teen Vogue, where she was the beauty director before returning to Lucky as editor-in-chief, quite the full circle moment. Now at Instagram, she works with fashion designers and influencers to help them better use the social media app. The mother of two children, daughter Ren, 3, and 1-year-old son Tao, Chen recently released a children's book called Juno Valentine about a little girl who tries on the shoes of iconic women, including Oprah, until she realizes her own shoes are the best of them all. Chen admits she had to try on many pairs herself before she found just the right ones. But she didn't land in Instagram guru shoes without some setbacks along the way. Here, Chen tells us about making a major decision she almost regretted. I only worked at Lucky for a few months as a freelance assistant before I got an interview for a job at Elle. I spent the next 3 years there as a beauty editor before I went to Teen Vogue for 7 years. 7 years! Both jobs were a dream, and I often wanted to pinch myself that I got to write about beauty for a living. So much for the law firm life. I left Teen Vogue to go freelance because my husband, who is a producer, had a job opportunity in Los Angeles. We were there for about 6 months when I started consulting for Anna Wintour, who was overseeing the relaunch of Lucky, the same publication where I'd once worked as an assistant. And then the opportunity came up for me to move back to New York and work at Lucky again, this time as the editor-in-chief. It was a magical time. I got to learn from Anna Wintour herself, a legend in the industry, and for a year and a half, I worked to turn around this magazine that I had such a passion for. I loved Lucky. I loved the content. I loved the work. I loved the feel of it. But then the company decided to change the direction of the publication. It went from the fun shopping book I love so dearly to a joint venture with a company named Beachmint, which would turn Lucky into primarily an e-commerce shopping site. I was 7 months pregnant with my first child, my daughter Wren, when I learned that the magazine I cared so much about was changing at its core. It was really a struggle for me because I knew I wanted to get into this business to create content and storytelling in a narrative type of way. And e-commerce, well, that wasn't it. So I made a crazy decision. I decided that after I gave birth to Wren, I would take some time off. It was time to leave Lucky with no other job lined up. I know, but it just felt right. The job that I was so passionate about had changed completely, and I knew I wouldn't be good at my job or fulfilled if I stayed. New motherhood is overwhelming enough. The hormones and the emotions, everything would make me cry. So the idea of breaking up with not just Lucky, but potentially magazines, that made me cry too. A lot. That was definitely my setback. I felt very lost and unsure of my decision and what would come next. But I also had a child who needed me, and I thought I deserved to bask in the wonderment of this person I created. So I spent those months trying to keep it all together. Well, as things tend to happen, I had no idea what was in store. About 3 months later, I got an email from a friend who worked at Instagram. We'd met at South by Southwest a few years back and kept in touch on and off. When he would come down to New York, I would see him, and the same when I was in San Francisco. So when he said, "Hey, I'm in town, let's get Mexican food," I didn't think anything of it. I remember we were at this restaurant, ABC Cocina, trying their very controversial guacamole, made with peas instead of avocado, in case you're wondering. And he basically said, "So there's a job and we want to hire you for it." I heard fashion and I heard Instagram and I heard New Chapter. And well, that was 3 years ago. I've been working at Instagram ever since. When I was growing up, I was never the smartest kid at my school, nor was I the most accomplished. I was like flawlessly average, growing up in a family that had very high expectations. And then I didn't get into my top college. I didn't succeed at becoming a doctor. I didn't succeed at becoming a lawyer or even finding a job after I graduated. But my career in magazines was my gift. Lucky was my gift. It almost felt wrong to throw away the gift that I'd wanted for so long. But I realized it was also a gift to spend time with my daughter as a first-time mother. And it was also a gift to be able to know when something is no longer right for me. While looking back, the difficult decision to leave Lucky felt a lot like a setback when it happened. I don't look at it that way now. The changes that happened there allowed me to take some time for serious exploration, both within my career and myself. I learned that it's okay to say, "I'm not happy in what I'm doing right now and I want to do something else." I didn't have to feel guilty that I had finally found the dream job and then needed to let it go. Having the courage to let it go allowed life to bring me back to my passion in a new way, through social media. I love social media, and I love Instagram, and I love fashion. I had no idea this could be a job, but hey, here I am. The lesson in all of this is have faith. The job may not come immediately, and things may change unexpectedly, but if you're approaching everything you do with a passion from deep inside of you, with some hard work, it will all fall into place. Our next article by Stephanie Farrington is titled, "How to Stop Feeling Bad About Saying Sorry and Learn to Apologize Well." My sorries are chronic and most often unwarranted. I express contrition for things like lightly brushing someone's shoulder on the subway, for accidentally dropping my own pen or wallet on the floor, for taking a day to respond to an email, for declining a social invitation, for sneezing. The list literally could scroll on and on. It's a tick I could never seem to kick. Then I saw my 6-year-old daughter Marty echoing my effusive sorrying and decided I needed to pinpoint what underlies the rapid-fire impulse. Is it a knee-jerk response to all the destructive gender imperatives that demand women prioritize agreeability, adaptability, and excessive niceness at a cost to their own self-respect and well-being? Does it spring from a pathological well of trauma? or from our greater capacity for empathy? Could it be a simple desire to facilitate and maintain happy social relations? Ultimately, I hope that by critically questioning it, I'd begin to understand how destructive it is. Turns out the answer is more complex than I realized. It could be very damaging or not at all. It all depends on why you're saying sorry and how you feel about it. Despite all the campaigns in recent years urging women to stop with the cascades of contrition, like Amy Schumer's sketch poking fun at women's reflexive apologies, Pantene Pro-V's Sorry Not Sorry commercial, and Gmail's Chrome extension Just Not Sorry, which trolls your emails for words that undermine your message, Georgetown University linguist Deborah Tannen, Ph.D., cautions against over-psychoanalyzing our reflexive sorries because more often than not, they aren't apologies. Tannen, who authored You Just Don't Understand, Women and Men in Conversation, calls them conversational rituals that do not reflect our internal mental state, meaning we don't really feel sorry or culpable. She says they're akin to saying, how are you, which is not meant to elicit a full medical report, she jokes. Sorry can also be a very gracious and socially expected and accepted way to transition in a conversation. Oh, sorry, I was going to something else, or oh, sorry to interrupt, she says. You have to be cautious not to assume that everything is a deep psychological thing, she warns. Corina Schumann, Ph.D., a professor at the University of Pittsburgh who studies the function of apology, as well as its psychological underpinnings, agrees that a unilateral indictment of sorrying is not in order, nor does her research show that women apologize that much more than men. Her study of 33 women and 33 men showed that after 12 days of chronicling their perceived offenses and apologies, women offered more apologies than men, 217 versus 158, but taking into account the total number of offenses they reported, men and women apologized for the same proportion of offenses. In another study, which included 63 female and 57 male undergraduates, Schumann asked the participants to imagine three hypothetical scenarios where they had offended a friend and asked them to rate the likelihood that they'd issue an apology for the various trespasses. While she found a difference between men and women, it was small. On a 7-point scale, women reported an average likelihood of apologizing of 6.58 versus men's 6.23, but the difference seems to extend from women seeing the imagined transgressions as more serious. I found that women do apologize more often than men, but it doesn't seem to be driven by men actively withholding apologies when they think they've done something wrong, says Schumann. Rather, it seems to stem from a perceptual difference in whether or not something is severe enough to deserve an apology. The psychology behind that perception is very complex, she says, adding that apologies are a polite strategy and an efficient way to resolve conflict. While Schumann wonders whether women's effusions of sorry are reflective of a greater orientation toward empathy and sociability, she's not aware of any research that looks at whether it's symptomatic of a self-effacing tendency to linguistically dwarf ourselves to make others feel bigger and better. Last year, however, the Depression Project, a mental health advocacy group informed by clinicians and research, shed light on the sadness and pain that resides in some who over-apologize. In a post the organization published titled Reasons Some May Constantly Apologize, which actress Viola Davis, a vocal opponent of women's propensity to over-apologize, amplified on Instagram, it enumerated a list of causes that resonated with nearly 100,000 of Davis's fans. They have depression and feel like they're bringing the mood down. They feel like they're constantly in the way. They feel like a burden and can't see the good in themselves. They have anxiety and worry they're doing something wrong. They feel like you're too good for them and they fall short of what they believe you deserve. They have been mentally abused and consequently believe they're always in the wrong. They want to avoid confrontation at all costs, as in the past it's escalated quickly. The author of Prescriptions Without Pills for Relief from Depression, Anger, Anxiety, and More, Susan Heitler, Ph.D., a clinical psychologist based in Israel, thinks the messaging is on point, although she'd expand it to guide people towards self-probing questions to help them pinpoint the origins of their need to apologize swiftly and frequently. Heitler emphasizes that the problem with always ceding our authority to another in this way is that it can possibly breed depression. Depression results when you've caved or folded on an issue that's important to you. It takes the air out of your balloon so you're small. You feel powerless and hopeless, she explains. Whatever the psychological reasons compelling us toward constant contrition, there's a real downside to hyper-apologizing in the workplace for both men and women, according to Shulman's research. It could come with some competence costs, so they're seen as less competent, less assertive, less agentic, and less of a potential leader if they're apologizing for all kinds of things that they're not actually responsible for, Shulman explains. Tannen adds that women suffer a double bind if they don't speak in ways that are expected of them. A double bind is a situation where if you have two demands you have to fulfill, but anything you do to fulfill one actually violates the other, she says, a persistent challenge for women in the workforce. If we talk in ways expected of women, we're liked but underestimated. If we talk in ways expected of a person in authority, we're respected but are seen as too aggressive, she explains. Tannen recounts the story of a woman executive who scaled back her apologies at work and was judged harshly for it. Once she peppered them back into everyday utterances, she was viewed more favorably. Learning to apologize well, according to Shulman's research, averts the negative fallout of over-apologizing. Even if you're apologizing a lot, it's okay. You won't get that competence hit if you're doing it effectively. Shulman's breakdown of an impactful apology includes three core components. Express your apology with sincerity. Show remorse with a clear, heartfelt formulation, such as, I'm sorry or I feel terrible. Assume responsibility for your mistake. Take ownership of the way you've misstepped by directly articulating your transgression. I'm sorry for the way I said that, or I'm sorry for being late. Come up with a fix for the future. Finally, propose a repair or fix to show the offended party that you'll work on it. I'll slow down and watch my tone in the future, or I'll leave earlier to be sure I'm on time next time. Lastly, Shulman proposes 5 tips to ensure we're apologizing from a place of awareness and strength. Take a sorry inventory. Keep an apology diary or reflect on all the times you've expressed contrition at the end of the day and notice the pattern of apology that emerges. Ask yourself questions. Shulman proposes asking yourself, what was the situation? Was I responsible? How would it have looked if I hadn't apologized? What was my goal in apologizing? How would I have felt if I hadn't apologized? Get feedback. We're too entrenched in our own bias or perspective, so ask a few people's opinions about whether they'd have apologized in the same situation, she suggests. And lastly, make adjustments. Once you determine the kinds of sorries you're comfortable withholding, you can adapt your apology protocols accordingly. Both Shulman and Tannen agree that it's important to look at each sorry in its own context, i.e. read the room, to determine if one is warranted. I always like to say there's no right or wrong here. There's no objective situation that necessarily deserves an apology, Shulman says. Our last article is Oprah's urgent message on how we prevail in dark times. Just sitting here thinking about how do we make sense of these times? Quite frankly, I'm having trouble because the world seems like it's flipped. One of my South African daughter girls, who's about to turn 28, asked me on the day that 10 people were massacred in Buffalo, did I still believe that humans are basically good? Yes, I do, I said, because humans aren't born hating. You've got to be taught to hate and fear. You've got to be taught from year to year. You've got to be carefully taught. Remember that rhyme from South Pacific? Well, the fact is, we now live in a world where there are just multi-avenues amplified with the World Wide Web on being taught how to turn vitriol into violence and crimes of hatred. And everybody who says that this isn't who we are as a country needs to reconsider our reality because it's happening. It's here before our very eyes. Deaths to gun violence in a country with more guns than people, the people have to take responsibility for how the guns are used. That's just plain common sense, which is a voting body of citizens concerned for our own well-being and our neighbors. We used to have that concern. So what has happened to us where the mass shootings just keep coming? Whether a Baptist church in Charleston or a synagogue in Pittsburgh or a Tops market in Buffalo, the pain and loss, the aftermath of trauma and PTSD never ends. As we go on with our lives and just wait on the next one, we're no longer even shocked because shootings have become the background noise for us. We hear about another tragic event and then we just keep it moving because we live in a country where there have been almost 200 shootings involving at least 4 victims shot or killed since January. When 4 or 5 people are shot, you barely even hear about it anymore. It doesn't even penetrate because we're just so numb to it. But every number is somebody's daughter, somebody's mother, somebody's brother, father, son, and all the speeches that follow about hopes and prayers for the victims' families seem so futile and weak in the face of what we're really dealing with. I know there are no simple solutions, because after Newtown, where the babies were shot in their kindergarten classes and nothing happened, outraged people said they were, but no legislation or regulation from Congress to back it up. I knew for sure there'd be darker days ahead, and now here we are. Each of us can only do the best we can to fight back the numbness that comes from not being able to even ingest any more pain. Don't you feel that sometimes? Watching the news like your brain just shuts down and you can't even process it. Each of us can only do the best we can in trying to remain centered, remain conscious, offering our love and compassion in ways that can make a difference and contribute to the whole, and that is why your daily spiritual practice is so important. You have to keep yourself whole, even if the rest of the world around you seems to be cracking up. Numbness that comes from not being able to even ingest any more pain. Don't you feel that sometimes? Watching the news like your brain just shuts down and you can't even process it. Each of us can only do the best we can in trying to remain centered, remain conscious, offering our love and compassion in ways that can make a difference and contribute to the whole, and that is why your daily spiritual practice is so important. You have to keep yourself whole, even if the rest of the world around you seems to be cracking up. We have run out of time for today's episode of Oprah Magazine. I hope you enjoyed it and be sure to listen next time. I'm Brandi Spragata, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Oprah Magazine is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.